The threat of the Omicron variant prompts the Philippines to study upping its vaccination target. We discuss where the inoculation program currently stands with ABS-CBN data analytics head Edson Guido. More than 2,000 Metro Manila students back in school after nearly 2 years. Later on in the program, we talk to Raymond Basilio, Secretary General of the Alliance of Concerned Teachers. A shooting incident in Zamboanga City leaves two Basilan town mayors injured. And the lawyer for Energy Chief Alfonso Cusi and UDENA Chairman Dennis Uy says his clients are open to withdrawing libel complaints against journalists after a sincere apology. Hi, I'm Camina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. The Philippines now studying increasing its COVID-19 vaccination target to 90% due to the threat of the Omicron variant. See, the country initially aimed to inoculate at least 70% of the population to achieve herd immunity. But as new variants emerge, with some more contagious than the original strain found in China, Health Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega says inoculations must be ramped up. For the League of Provinces, the push for double vaccination efforts has not been easy. It admits most provinces failed to reach the target set by government for the national vaccination days due to a shortage in vaccinators. The country was able to administer 9.9 million doses following a two-day extension of the campaign, which ran from November 29th to December 3rd. Well, how significant was the impact of government's five-day vaccination drive? Here to help us break down the numbers, Edson Guido, head of the ABS-CBN's data analytics team. Edson, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today. Good afternoon to you.
Good to see you, Ms. Casey, and good afternoon to our viewers.
All right, so assessment of the national vaccination days, would you call it a success?
Well, if we would look at the target of the government, they had this initial target of 15 million for 3 days. So that's around 5 million per day. But they eventually revised the target to 9 million because there was a shortage in syringe. But there will be another three-day national vaccination days on December 15 to 17. But if you would basically look at the initial target of 9 million, then the government was able to exceed that target because they were able to administer 9.9 million doses during the national vaccination days. But they were only able to exceed that with the two additional days last December 2 and 3. Because if you would look at just the initial 3 days, they were just able to administer less than 8 million doses. And the additional 2 days allowed us to reach the target of 9 million, giving us a total of 9.9 million doses. But overall, if we would look at the vaccination for the past week, it was way higher compared to what we saw before because we allocated this week to really ramping up our vaccinations. But if we would look at the overall number, we're now at 54 million number of 53 million individuals who have received their first dose, which represents 48% of the population, while 38.1 million are fully vaccinated, which is equivalent to 35% of the population. So we still have a long way to go. You mentioned earlier, Ms. Casey, that the target should be 90% of the population. But if you look at the number of fully vaccinated, it is just around 35% of the population. So it's still a long way to go.
But it's still 9.9 million individuals. How significant is that in terms of changing lives, getting that job back, you know, moving the economy once again, Edson?
Definitely, it was very helpful because before this figure, we were just at around 30% of the population fully vaccinated. But when I looked at the data, the focus really was on increasing the first dose coverage. So out of the 9.9 million doses that were administered during the national vaccination days, I saw that 7.5 million were actually first dose. So that's very good because on the second national vaccination days, which is from December 15 to 17, then I would anticipate that we would now focus on administering the second dose for these first dose recipients. So right now, we have more than 53 million individuals with their first dose and 38 million fully vaccinated. So I'm anticipating that by December 15 to 17, we would see an increase in the second dose recipients and would possibly reach around 50 million fully vaccinated individuals. But again, 50 million fully vaccinated individuals, if we would look at our total population of 110 million, it's still below 50% of the population.
But the target is 54 million by the year end, or by the year's end, Edson. And as you correctly pointed out, I think we're now at what, 37 million?
38.1 million.
All right.
Fully vaccinated.
So the balance, is that going to be met with just a few weeks to go before the year's end?
It's possible, given that I think that the focus of the government will be to administer as many second doses as possible on the next national vaccination days from December 15 to 17. But we have to remember, it's just 3 days. The initial national vaccination days that we had was 5 days.
Correct.
And for those 5 days, we were able to exceed our target of 9 million, but only because we extended the number of days. No, so if we would just judge this from the 3 days that were initially set by the government, then we were not able to achieve the target of 9 million, which was actually even lower than the initial target of 15 million for those 3 days. So definitely we're still seeing logistical challenges, and that's a problem in our vaccination, as well as the limited manpower. We're also seeing that as a possible contributor also.
Exactly. We're going to go into that right now, because as always in our past conversations, Edson, the story really is in the provinces, right? The logistical support or the lack of it. And then we just read the story right there that some provinces have encountered a shortage in vaccinators, and that's manpower. So how might that play into the goal of achieving that 54 million target by the year's end?
Yes, sir. You're right, Ms. Casey. The challenge really is in the provinces, because if you would look at the breakdown of the vaccine doses administered, NCR right now has 9 million, more than 9 million individuals fully vaccinated, which is already 65% of the population for NCR. But for the next region, in terms of the number of doses administered, that is region 3. But if we would look at their number of fully vaccinated, it is just at 4.5 million, which represents around 36% of their total population. So we're seeing a disparity really across the different provinces when you have NCR at more than 60%, and then the next region is at 36%. And how about the other regions? Because for region 3, we can consider region 3 as one of the more developed regions compared to, say, other regions with less manpower. So definitely, I think moving forward, the challenge would be the ramping up vaccination in all the far-flung areas, and the shortage in supplies, as well as the challenges in manpower, will definitely be a problem moving forward.
Here's the thing though, Edson, we haven't even talked about Omicron and the threat of that variant. Initially, when we were talking about vaccination and the lack of it in the early days of this pandemic, we were talking about really the supply being choked because of all these more developed countries getting their hands first on the vaccine. But now with the threat of the Omicron variant and a lot of countries really scrambling to get those booster shots in, do you foresee any shortage once again in vaccine supplies, and that the Philippines once again will be at the losing end of it?
Actually, the good news now, Ms. Casey, is that we have ample supply. As of latest data, we have 146 million total doses that have arrived in the country. But the problem really is the administration of vaccines, because if you have 146 million available, 146 million total, and you have just administered around 91 million total, then you have around 55 million doses available. So the challenge really is not the supply right now. We have more than enough supply.
So that reasoning won't fly anymore. That's a thing of the past. We have enough supply. It's now going to be, as he said, in the administration, the logistical handling of things. Go ahead.
Yes, supply is no longer an issue. You're right, Ms. Casey. Supply is no longer an issue. And the challenge really moving forward is the logistics. And for me personally, if you would look at the number of vaccines that have arrived, this is something that we actually anticipated, and this was something that the national government has also been saying for the past few months, that we would have enough supply during the fourth quarter of the year. So my question really is, why were we not able to anticipate the possible logistical issues when we have enough time to really prepare for this surplus of vaccines that would be arriving in the Philippines?
Same question, because the national vaccination days, that didn't happen overnight. There was ample planning and there was enough communication between and among LGUs and the national government, and yet you hear of the lack of vaccinators.
Yes, so I think moving forward, the problem really is the other aspects of our vaccine rollout. So because it's good that we have enough supply coming in, and again, we're very grateful to all the donors also that were giving us vaccines as well as COVAX. But the problem really is the other aspects of our vaccine rollout, which again includes the supply issues, the supply of syringe, as well as the manpower, because these are things that we should have anticipated months ago.
Mm. All right. So we're nearing the end of the year. We're just a couple of weeks, a little over a couple of weeks before the year's end. They're thinking of another round of vaccination days, right? But do you think that it should be 5 days and not just 3 days as originally planned?
Yes, definitely. I think the 5 days would help, because what we're seeing now is that for the initial national vaccination day of 3 days, we were not able to meet the target, the revised target of 9 million. And we needed those two extra days just to reach our target. So the number of first dose recipients, for us to be able to give them the same number of doses for their second dose, then we would also need 5 days. Well, moving forward, so that we would be able to reach our target of 54 million. Because right now, the number of fully vaccinated is just at 38 million, while the target is 54 million. But if you would look at the bigger picture, the 54 million target to end toward the for the end of the year is still not enough, because the 54 million just represents 49% of our total population. We have to remember that the initial target is to fully vaccinate 70% of our total population. So to give us that perspective, 70% of the total population, as what we've seen in other countries, is no longer enough against Delta.
But still,
and now
we're
looking at Omicron.
Yeah, so but still in all, you're looking at these people who will be fully vaxxed in a matter of days. You're looking at minors as well being fully vaxxed in a matter of days. This can very well paint a brighter picture for 2022.
Yes, definitely it would be better for us right now. The picture is going to be, it would give us a better picture moving forward, because initially, the past few months, we're just vaccinating at around 300,000, 400,000 per day. And right now, we were able to show that we can reach more than a million doses administered per day. So I think that has to be the challenge, is to sustain that pace moving forward. Because if we can vaccinate 1 million doses, if we can vaccinate 1 million people per day, then why can't we do that every day? Especially if we would look at the data, Ms. Casey, on weekends, usually we see a dip in the number of vaccine doses administered. So the challenge really is to be able to sustain this pace every day.
And if you're able to sustain that pace every single day from here onwards, what kind of a trajectory is that going to, is that going to give us? How will that trajectory look like for us as we enter 2022? If you talk about the economy, talk about going back to face-to-face classes, talking about all these people once again, having those jobs back and having enough income to put food on the table.
I think right now, at our current pace, we would be able to reach 70% of the population by the first quarter of 2022, which is the target, also the revised target of the government right now. So that will definitely help restore consumer confidence, which is going to be very important to revive the economy. But I think the challenge now is also to administer the booster doses, because as what we've seen in other countries, especially what's happening now in Europe, where they have covered more than 70% of their population, and yet we're seeing a surge in their number of cases. And in Israel, in September, we also saw the same thing, where a surge happened, even though they were able to vaccinate more than 60% of the population. But what happened in Israel is that when they administered booster shots, we saw a decline in the number of cases. So the booster shots is also something that we have to plan moving forward, where we also have to ramp up our the number of booster shots that we're administering. But Ms. Casey, just another point that I would like to highlight.
Go
if you would look at the data, 5.2 million senior citizens are fully vaccinated. And that is just 53% of the total number of senior citizens in the country. And that is a reason why we continue to see a high number of deaths that are being reported daily. So I think moving forward, if you really want to revive the economy and reopen the economy while trying to control or manage the COVID situation, then you also have to make sure that you are vaccinating the senior citizens, because they are the most vulnerable, sector. And if you want to safely reopen the economy, then you have to ensure that the most vulnerable sector, which in this case are the senior citizens, they are protected. And the way to ensure that is to make sure that we reach out to our senior citizens, because the vaccine coverage at 53% is still relatively low.
Yeah. Well, as always, you know, things may look like they're looking up. And in some aspect, you can say that. But with our discussion today, it only goes to show once again, Edson, that we are not out of the woods yet.
Yes, that is correct, Ms. Casey. Definitely, this is not yet the time to be complacent. Right now, the numbers are improving. But as what we saw in global data, in other, the experiences of other countries, the vaccines, after a few months, there's waning immunity. So we have to be ready for that. And right now, the priority really is to vaccinate as many people as possible, including booster shots, so that we can safely reopen the economy.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Edson Guido, their head of ABS-CBN Data Analytics Team. Nice to see you again, Edson. Take care. Keep safe.
Good to see you, Ms. Casey, and thanks for having me. Please
always
stay safe.
A pleasure. Thanks, you too. All right, back to more news here in the newsroom. At least two COVID-19 referral hospitals in Metro Manila say they are prepared for the possibility of a surge in infections with the emergence of the Omicron variant. That's after initial research showed the latest variant may be causing more reinfections among COVID survivors. The Philippine General Hospital and Lung Center of the Philippines have been admitting more non-coronavirus patients lately, but they say they are ready to reconvert their non-COVID wards if necessary.
Ang nagiging hamon naman ngayon sa PGH ay yung pagdami ng mga non-COVID patients, no? Kahapon nga ay nagkaroon ng parang nagka-surge doon sa aming emergency room.
Tuloy-tuloy naman ang pasok ngayon ng mga non-COVID lung cases namin.
Going now to the U.S., where the Omicron variant has reached at least 16 states. The latest was detected in Louisiana from an individual who had traveled within the United States. Many of the cases are fully vaccinated individuals with mild symptoms. Dr. Anthony Fauci, America's top infectious disease expert, says it does not look like there is a great severity to the new variant, but he notes that it is still too early to draw conclusions. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, meanwhile, says the Delta variant still accounts for 99.9% of COVID-19 cases nationwide. Vaccines are known to protect against hospitalization and death against the Delta variant, so health officials hope they will blunt the impact of Omicron as well. The U.S. has averaged 119,000 infections and 1,300 deaths a day over the last 7 days. The British government reintroduces travel restrictions due to the threat of the Omicron variant. Travelers heading to the UK must now show negative COVID-19 test results taken within 48 hours before departure. The rule will be implemented beginning December 7th. It will apply to all travelers aged over 12. The UK also added Nigeria to its travel red list after England reported 21 Omicron infections linked to the country. In total, the United Kingdom has so far detected 246 cases of the new COVID variant. The Philippines logged 603 new COVID infections Sunday, bringing the country's total to 2,834,000. The health department also confirmed 156 new deaths, but it says only 12 of those occurred in December, while the rest were late reports due to issues with its data system. Active cases now stand at 13,852, the lowest since June 1st last year. The Octo Research Group believes case numbers will remain low this month, even with the threat of the Omicron variant.
Even if the protection is lower, because so many of our kababayans have been vaccinated in Manila and in many of the metropolitan, the cities are protected now.
More than 2,000 elementary and senior high school students in Metro Manila returned to face-to-face classes after nearly 2 years of COVID-induced school closures. 28 schools were selected across the capital region to join the pilot phase of in-person learning, which began in mid-November. The Education Department says the necessary protocols are in place in case a student or personnel tests positive for the coronavirus.
Na lahat ng mga eskwelahan ay dapat handa dito at ang atin pong instruction ay kung meron na lalabas na kaso, whether whatever variant, ay istap po kaagad yung ating implementation.
Teachers and students who will participate in the face-to-face classes have already been tested and cleared from the COVID-19 barriers. Elementary schools in Pasig and Makati, among those that have taken part in the resumption of limited face-to-face classes in Metro Manila. Let's get an update now from our correspondent, Ara Perez. Ara, go ahead.
Carmina, here at Comembo Elementary School in Makati, even with the holding of flag ceremony, morning exercise, and other routine, students are being taught the habit of washing their hands, wearing face masks at all times, and practicing physical distancing. 72 kinder to grade 3 students are participating in today's first day of pilot face-to-face classes. Classrooms are equipped with UV light and air purifier. Windows are open and electric fans are being used for better ventilation. In Pasig Elementary School, there was no flag ceremony. 27 grades 1 and 2 students were asked to proceed to their classes upon arriving at school. Students engaged with their lessons and story time. The compliance to health protocols and the teaching strategy of teachers are what made DepEd happy and satisfied with the face-to-face classes of NCR schools.
Makikita natin na ito ay posible, no? At kayang gawin. Yung mga naunang paaralan na naisama natin sa pilot, karamihan dito ay nandoon sa mga malalayong lugar, no? Kaya medyo iba yung kanilang environment compared dito na nasa syudad, no? Nakita natin yung kaibahan in terms of facilities at pero bagamat masabi natin na may pagkakaiba sa pasilidad, ang importante dito yung pagkakapareho nung pinatutupad natin yung mga health protocols.
This December, DepEd will submit to President Duterte its assessment and recommendation on the pilot implementation of face-to-face classes, which will be the basis for the expansion and reopening of more schools. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Ara Perez. They're joining us live from the city of Makati. Take care, Ara. Keep safe. Moving on, the Education Department sees further expansion of the pilot face-to-face classes by next month. That's amid good feedback so far after more schools reopen today. DepEd Undersecretary Nepomuceno Malaluan says they will submit a full report on the pilot testing to President Duterte before the year ends.
And so far, it has been smooth. We have officials of the department that are on the ground at both the central office and the regions. Isakraki, and up to this time, I've been monitoring and we have not received any adverse report. Since so far ay maganda ang tinatakbo, ay ang ating ina-anticipate ay ang magiging recommendation ay ang pagpapalawak nito at sa tinatawag naming expanded phase early next year.
The Alliance of Concerned Teachers wants more protection for educators and educators and their students as the Philippines heads towards the full resumption of in-person learning. Joining us now to discuss their proposals for the safe reopening of schools is Alliance of Concerned Teachers Secretary General Raymond Basilio. Raymond, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and it's our honor to be with you this afternoon.
All right. Tell me about your assessment so far with schools reopening, more schools reopening today. What's your assessment?
Well, we are happy with the expansion of the piloting of the face-to-face classes in the country. But we reiterate our call for the Education Department to implement weekly antigen testing to our students and to our teachers. This is to ensure, no, that our teachers will not be infected by the COVID-19 virus. And this is to make sure that also there will be no phenomenal rate of infection among our learners. As we move forward with the opening of more schools, we reiterate our call that the Education Department must also allot budget for our teachers and students that might get sick, no, during the implementation of the pilot testing.
You know, the pilot testing, as you said, is going to expand as the days go by, as the months go by. But when you look at the budget passed for the Education Department, does this reflect the need for more tests to be able to safely reopen schools all across the country, Raymond?
Well, we are yet to see the approved budget by the Senate, but there's a provision for face-to-face classes in that budget. So we do hope that this increase in the budget of the Education Department will be utilized for the protection of our teachers and learners.
You know, when you look at the comments online as well as the reaction to news reports, the reaction seems to swing from one side to the other. On one hand, as you correctly stated, there are some teachers who were really so excited to just teach once again in person, be with their students. On the other hand, there are those who are still quite scared to go out and teach. How do you win them over?
Well, first thing is first, no? The hesitancy that our teachers are feeling, or our public is feeling right now, is because of the failure of the government to address accordingly the pandemic in the country. But we keep on telling our parents, our co-teachers, that we need to address the massive learning loss that we are into right now. No? Mm-hmm. We cannot afford a generation of learners who don't know how to read and write.
Yeah, so it's a sense of duty, really, that's fueling the teachers to go back out there and teach our kids once again.
Yes, that's the reason. We would like to perform our duties, and we would like to do it accordingly. We would like to see our learners soon, that they will be able to accomplish their dreams. That's only possible if they have good basic education.
Conversely, though, Raymond, you said a while ago that government still, there's so much lacking in terms of how government hopes to protect the teachers, to have this safe environment for our learners and the teachers as well. But conversely, there are still some teachers who are themselves hesitant to get vaccinated. How do you win them over?
We keep on telling them about the importance and about the safety of the vaccine. And that's why we call also on the government to increase its education program, to engage our teachers, and finally convince them, no, to get vaccinated. The problem about their being hesitant to get vaccinated is because of the many fake news and many many questions that answers are not yet provided to them. No, no one in the provinces, for instance, can provide the answers on the questions of somebody died because of the vaccination, somebody got a severe side effect because of the vaccination. But if these things are answered accordingly by health professionals or by the Department of Education, I think the hesitancy on vaccination will be resolved.
But by virtue of the profession, isn't it sort of, should it be built in, really, that you guys should know and listen to science and really believe the science and not just wait for the information, basically saying that, you know, you should know better because you're a teacher, because this is your profession. What do you say about that kind of an observation about teachers who are hesitant to get vaccinated?
But we cannot blame them, no? Because for instance, we also have medical professionals who are against the vaccination program. So we need really to intensify our education work.
Mm. How many of your constituents would you know who are quite hesitant still to get vaccinated?
But there's no exact figure right now, but actually, in the provinces, the main reason why teachers are still not yet vaccinated is because of the supply of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So many are still unvaccinated, not because of the hesitancy, but because of the supply. So I think that's around there's around 10 to 20% of the teaching population who are yet to be vaccinated.
Okay. Now, here we are. We're talking about in-person classes and the hope that this will be expanded as the months go by. But you and I both know that there's another duty for some teachers come 2022, and it's going to be election duty. What do you make of the adjustments that have been made and even proposed still for the pay of those who will be on election duty come 2022, Raymond?
We reiterate our appeal to the Commission on Elections that the minimum honoraria should be at 10,000 pesos. Again, our teachers are going to face the risk of COVID-19, and the election duty for the coming election is much longer as compared to the past election. So we believe that the 10,000 pesos honoraria is just enough for our teachers. Mm. So also, in addition to that, we appeal for much higher health protection budget, health insurance budget for our teachers, that this budget that can be used once they get sick. No?
How confident are you really, Raymond, that you will get this, considering that you know what's happening to our medical frontliners, right? Those who are there really battling this pandemic have yet to receive full compensation.
Yeah, that's really that's a matter that you need to fight right now, no? So actually, we don't believe that the government don't have the funds, no? It's just a matter of how they prioritize the utilization of these funds, no? We can even spend a lot of millions of money for face shields that are not actually needed, no? And there are a lot of money missing because of corruption. So we join our frontliners in their call for the immediate release of their benefits and other protective protective benefits, no? So I think what we need to do is to compel or to exert more effort to call on our government to do their job.
Okay. You mentioned a while ago about, you know, really it's a call to serve the country that's really fueling the teachers to go out there and teach once again in person, because we can't afford our learners to be stuck in this rut a minute longer. But when you look at the election agenda, for example, of all these candidates who are going to run for the presidency in 2022, what are you looking for? What do you think should be on that agenda that will tell you that they're serious about getting this lost generation back on track?
First thing that we need to see on their agenda is the allocation of budget for the coming years. No? There are a lot of recommendations that the government should be spending around 6% of the gross domestic product solely for education, and until now we are yet to see that. No? So we are in talks with the presidentiables, with the senatoriables, and we are submitting our electoral agenda that we believe these items should be included in their programs, in their platform of government.
Are you ready to support any particular candidate, Raymond?
Well, right now, there is no particular candidate that we are ready to support. No, we are yet to see them telling us what are their education agenda, what are their projects, what are their platforms for our students, for our teachers.
Oh, what are you looking for exactly in their agenda?
Well, first
aside
one,
from the budget.
We need to see how are they going to safely reopen our schools, our public schools next year. Second, we need to see how are they going to address the issues of our teachers on matters of labor rights, on matters of benefits, on matters of salaries. Third, we need to see them how are they going to address the problems of students that can no longer afford to go to school because of the expenses related to it. Second, how are they going to address the issues of our schools that don't have the needed facilities and the needed materials for the opening next year.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Raymond Basilio there, Secretary General of the Alliance of Concerned Teachers. Just great talking to you, Raymond. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, too. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, a shooting in Zamboanga City leaves two town mayors injured, and authorities cracking down on political sorties that may run or make turn into super spreader events. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back, you're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The threat of the Omicron variant prompts the Philippines to study upping its vaccination target. More than 2,000 Metro Manila students back in school after nearly 2 years. A shooting incident in Zamboanga City leaves two Basilan town mayors injured. And the lawyer for Energy Chief Alfonso Cusi and UDENA Chairman Dennis Uy says his clients are open to withdrawing libel complaints against journalists after a sincere apology. Back with more news. The mayors of two Basilan towns injured in a shooting incident in Zamboanga City. Let's get more details now from our correspondent, Lizelle Lacas de Santos. Lizelle, go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, a mayor of Albarca Municipality of the province of Basilan was killed, while his other companion, the mayor of Akbar Municipality of the same province, was injured in a shooting incident at Baliwasan Seaside here in Zamboanga City past 8 a.m. today. Victims have been identified by the police as Ali Awal Sali, the mayor of Akbar Basilan, and Darussalam Sagindilan Lajid, the mayor of Albarca Basilan. Two of their security escorts were also injured. Initial reports disclose that the victims had just disembarked from a sea craft that ferried them from Basilan when they were shot by four unidentified motorcycle riding suspects with the use of pistol caliber 45. The suspects fled towards the inner portion of Seaside, Barangay Baliwasan, after the commission of the crime. The investigation is ongoing as we speak. Basilan Governor Jim Saliman Hataman has condemned in strongest terms possible the gun attacks on two of the province municipal mayors. He called on the authorities here to thoroughly investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators to justice the soonest possible time. Reporting from Zamboanga City, Lizelle Castro Santos, ABS-CBN News.
Thanks a lot, Lizelle. Take care and you keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the Philippine Interior and local government department will issue show cause orders against local officials over political gatherings held in their areas. The agency says local governments will be asked if health protocols were implemented during those events. The DILG is also finalizing guidelines for political sorties to prevent a super spreader event.
Dapat yan, may mga organizer yung mga ano na yun eh. Tapos ngayon,
LGU.
Pagdating sa politiko, yun ang nasa COMELEC na yan. Pag pumunta sila sa isang barangay o isang bayan o kung halimbawa at ano, aba, gastusan nila ang gastusan nila security. Dapat gastusan nila security to follow the health protocol. Mag-hire sila ng maraming security para ma-observe natin yung social distancing.
The Philippines' Election Commission has denied the accreditation of about 107 party list groups eyeing seats in Congress in the 2022 elections. That's according to the pool body spokesperson, Director James Jimenez. Among the party list groups denied were Nurses United, LGBT Plus, and Transport Groups Manibela, TDP Truck Drivers PH, and even the group of the veteran actress Nora Honor, the National Organization for Responsive Advocacies for the Arts. Jimenez says the denial stems from issues with requirements and representation.
For the most part, syempre iba-iba yung dahilan, ano, for the denial. Pero for the most part, ang nakita natin, pinakamaraming dahilan siguro ay yung hindi nila pagtugon sa requirements ng accreditation process. But the rest, may mga issues tungkol sa kanilang representation of the sector that they claim to represent.
So far, there are over 160 accredited party lists. Meanwhile, Comelec again clarifies the unvaccinated will not be prevented from voting in the 2022 elections. On Twitter, Comelec Commissioner Rowena Guanzon invites everyone to cast their votes on May 9th, whether they are vaccinated or unvaccinated. She adds, should the voter show symptoms on election day, they will be brought to an isolated polling place where they can cast their vote. The poll body spokesperson, meanwhile, doubts vaccination will be made a requirement for voting, asserting this is against the law. But when it comes to voters who are under quarantine during election day, the Comelec says Congress must pass legislation to allow mail-in voting for the COVID-19 positive. Former presidential spokesman and former lawmaker Harry Roque says he wants to provide compensation to all victims of human rights violations in the Philippines if he wins a Senate seat next year. Roque had previously backed efforts for the indemnification of victims of martial law during the dictatorship of the late Ferdinand Marcos. His statement comes as he faces backlash for endorsing the presidential candidacy of Marcos's son, Bongbong. But Roque says Marcos Jr. isn't involved in any of the cases of his parents.
The reality is, whether or not the Marcos' siblings will admit it, is that their parents have been the subject of jurisprudence, that there is ill-gotten wealth that has in fact been confiscated and part of it is given to the victims, and that there is even an American case saying that their parents are responsible for the gravest violations of human rights. But there is a distinction between the parents and the child. And I feel strongly about convicting anyone solely by reason of association because I was a victim of it as well. It's not fair. But beyond that, there are other reasons, of course. No other party adopted me. Who am I to complain? And the fact that it was very difficult not to endorse also the candidate of my own political candidate, no, Inday Sara Duterte.
In other news, Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi and UDENA Chairman Dennis Uy opened to withdrawing the libel suit they filed against nearly two dozen media practitioners if they publicly apologized to them. That's according to Cusi and Uy's lawyer, attorney Ruy Alberto Rondayin. The two have accused 17 journalists of reporting false and libelous statements on their involvement in the controversial Malampaya deal. Cusi and Uy are facing a graft complaint before the ombudsman over UDENA's acquisition of a 90% stake in Malampaya. But Rondayin claims the journalists involved merely based their stories on a press conference held by the complainants, as an actual complaint had yet to be filed at that time.
That's filed and docketed, it's stamped, received, then you can rely on that. That becomes an official proceeding and you can report on it without fear of a libel. They say that there was a complaint, but no one has seen, I haven't seen the complaint and no one has shown me a complaint. They said terrible things about this being the biggest crony case in history, biggest crony gift in history, about a massive graft. Imagine how their children feel. Imagine how they feel. So they have to vindicate their honor by filing the libel cases. But I'm sure my clients are open to a sincere apology, a genuine apology.
UDENA Corporation also on the defensive over the controversial Malampaya deal. Its president, Marty Escalona, asserts UDENA's acquisition underwent competitive bidding, adding it is fully capable of operating Malampaya.
These deals were awarded based on having the most compelling tender, demonstrating robust technical, financial, and legal capabilities, and crucially, a commitment to retain the brilliant Chevron and Shell staff who already run Malampaya. you know, the same highly knowledgeable and experienced staff who have been with Chevron and Shell for more than 20 years. We already have a truly formidable team of ex-Chevron and ex-Shell with an incredible depth of, you know, specialist upstream oil and gas expertise.
Escalona, also defending his boss, Davao businessman Dennis Oy, and his ties to President Rodrigo Duterte. He says even before Duterte assumed the presidency, Oy was already a successful businessman.
I've known Dennis for, you know, over 14 years now. And even prior to this administration, if some of you would recall, he had already been a successful businessman. He started Phoenix, he started Chelsea. You know, Phoenix for one, even prior to this administration, is already number three. You know, being an independent player, competing with the likes of Petron and Shell, you know, that's a task on its own. The fact that people are criticizing Dennis now only for the past 6 years is something that I think is unfounded and unfair.
Here's a question. Did you feel an extra chill this morning? Well, that's because Metro Manila just experienced its lowest temperature so far this season. Pagasa weather forecaster Chris Perez now joins us to tell us more about what happened this morning and how long this cool weather is expected to last. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, and you are right. So far, we have recorded the lowest minimum temperature since the start of the Amihan season. That is from November 2021 up to today. We have recorded a minimum temperature of about 20.2 here in Science Garden, Quezon City today. And as the Amihan progresses until the second month of next year, that is until February, we are still expecting to record lower minimum temperatures, not only over here in Metro Manila, but over most parts of Luzon as well, particularly the areas that will be immediately affected by the Amihan. And as for the weather forecast today, so far we are not expecting any tropical cyclones, but this Caraga and Davao region will be cloudy with scattered rain showers and thunderstorms, while Cagayan Valley, Cordillera Administrative Region, the provinces of Aurora and Northern Quezon will be cloudy with light rains. Metro Manila and the rest of the country will experience generally fair weather conditions apart from some isolated light rains. And that's the latest here at Pagasa Weather Forecasting Center. I'm Chris Perez reporting for ANC.
Thanks a lot, Chris. You and the rest of the team there, take care and you keep safe. World news now, at least 14 people are dead and dozens are injured in Indonesia following the eruption of the Semeru volcano. And as this report tells us, hot volcanic sediment and heavy rains could complicate rescue efforts.
Drone footage on Sunday showed an Indonesian town almost buried in volcanic ash after Mount Semeru erupted in East Java. The volcano threw up towers of ash and hot clouds on Saturday that blanketed nearby villages and sent residents fleeing in panic. One evacuee told Reuters of the sudden terror.
At first, I thought it was a bomb explosion, and all of a sudden it was Semeru erupting and spewing volcanic ashes. Suddenly, it was all dark, like it was going to destroy the earth. My children were scattered around, my husband was not around, and I was waiting for him. Then we evacuated ourselves to the evacuation camp.
Indonesia's disaster agency, BNPB, on Sunday said the eruption killed at least 14 people and injured dozens on Java Island. A BNPB official said around 1,300 people have been evacuated, while 9 people remain unaccounted for. A weather official on Sunday said heavy rain is expected for the next 3 days, which could complicate evacuation and rescue efforts.
In business, good news for motorists here in the Philippines. A big-time oil price rollback is set for tomorrow, Tuesday. Gasoline prices will go down by 2 pesos and 40 centavos per liter, while diesel prices will be slashed by 2 pesos and 65 centavos. Kerosene will see the biggest price cut of 2 pesos and 80 centavos per liter. Industry players say the drop in local pump prices is due to declining demand in the world oil market as more countries impose travel bans due to the Omicron variant. In sports, a boxing great Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather are set to face off again, but this time it will be on the hard court. See, the Philippines' fighting senator, who is currently gunning for the country's top post, says the rematch will be a charity basketball game, and it's expected to be held in next month.
Ang purpose namin is a basketball game, sports yan eh. So yun ang ano namin. Kung ano man yung politika natin dito, sa atin ito. Iba naman yun sa amin, sa sports yun, basketball. Wala nang ibang time eh, kasi katatapos ko lang lumaban nung August. So after nung August, wala naman tayong ginagawang activity, so basketball na lang.
Pacquiao and Mayweather faced off in 2015 in boxing's highest-grossing match, with Mayweather coming out the victor. It's December, which means it's time for another bumper crop of holiday flicks. From romantic comedies to action adventures, Manny the Movie Guy picks the best new Christmas movies you can stream right now.
From Apple TV Plus, check out A Gift from Bob. Based on the novels A Gift from Bob and The Little Book of Bob, this uplifting story tells the tale of a struggling street musician and his cat Bob and their fight against animal welfare, threatening to take away the beloved orange tabby cat during Christmas of all times. And on HBO Max, there's 8-Bit Christmas. Set in 1980s Chicago, this joyful tale has 10-year-old Jake Doyle on a quest to get the Christmas gift of his life, an 8-bit entertainment system.
Part of It's a Wonderful Lifetime.
And over on Lifetime, the network is releasing its first lesbian holiday rom-com with Under the Christmas Tree. It's finding love while looking for the best holiday tree. And Netflix, the home of quality original Christmas movies for years, has its first gay holiday rom-com with Single All the Way.
And I can't wait for people to see it.
Michael Urie and Philemon Chambers play best friends turned lovers in this sweet and funny film.
We're spreading rainbow this holiday season.
Rainbow!
Also on Netflix, A Castle for Christmas.
It's about being surrounded by people you love.
Visit Scotland with Brooke Shields and Carrie Elwes as they play a mismatched couple. She, a famous American author, and he, the Duke of the Dunbar Castle. And another royalty Christmas story, The Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star.
It's kind of, I've been saying it's like the holiday heist movie you never knew that you needed.
Vanessa Hudgens returns to her roles, all three of them. This time, they're solving the puzzle, who stole the Star of Peace? Our Capamilia will love that Hudgens embraces her Filipino heritage in the film.
Okay. My family's from the Philippines. We do hugs.
Yeah, of course. You gotta have some of the heritage. We need the ancestors.
And I just want to tell you, maligayang Pasko.
Aww.
And another new holiday romantic comedy on Netflix is Love Hard. Catfishing plus Christmas equals a joy to be had by all. And for a magical tale, how about the origin of Father Christmas in A Boy Called Christmas?
I fell so in love with Nicholas as a character.
Director Gil Kenan gives us a Christmas tale that is at times sad, funny, but totally whimsical. This one tells the tale of a young Nicholas before he became Santa Claus.
I hope these films brighten up your holiday. I'm Manny the Movie Guy, wishing everyone a very Merry Christmas.
And that'll do it for today's edition of Dateline Philippines. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. You can watch highlights, recaps, and exclusive content of our shows online. Subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Stay with us here on the News Channel.